Coming up on Golf Today, the LPGA season begins Thursday in Orlando with celebrities and big-time golfers, but not everyone is 100% to start the year. A live report in moments. And Davis Love III tabbed to be an assistant for Zach Johnson at the Ryder Cup. The last time the U.S. won on the road, Davis played on the team. We'll ask him the roadmap to victory. And the most interesting man in golf joins us from Hualalai, getting ready for the PGA Tour Champions season opener. Put the Rioja down. It's time to make birdies on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
After 2 weeks in Hawaii, the PGA Tour hits the West Coast for the 64th edition of the American Express annual three-course event in the California desert. One of many things you can watch this week on Golf Channel. Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship begins Thursday, annual Middle East swing on the DP World Tour. And then the 2023 LPGA season kicks off with the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions. As mentioned, the American Express begins Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and the PGA Tour Champion season kicks off in Hawaii with the Mitsubishi Electric Championship at Hualalai. This is Golf Today. Dan Manak alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. How about the PGA Tour hitting my part of the world, the West Coast? Sneaky good field this week in the California desert.
Some star power in the desert. You know, you've got Scottie Scheffler, John Rahm there, Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele coming back from injury after the WD. The Century Tournament of Champions. And this is one of those events that people thought might have somehow been weakened by the new PGA Tour schedule. But we're going to find out later in the show exactly how the Amex got this kind of a strong field.
Pat McCabe, the tournament director of the Amex, will join us a little bit later. Are you surprised, by the way, with the strength of this field? This is not a designated event, but it tells you, hey, you know, there are players that have certain places where they like to play, and it's the beginning of the season as well.
The beginning of the season, I think, is the important part here. There's a lot of guys. It's amazing how little golf a lot of these guys played. Obviously, Patrick Cantlay didn't play very much in the fall at all. Will Zalatoris was injured. There's a lot of guys trying to knock off a little bit of that winter rust. So I think we'll see quite a bit of them before we actually get towards Augusta in April and even beyond those designated events.
Well, before we look ahead, let's look back, by the way, 2022. The LPGA season ended. Lydia Ko took home the title at the CME Group Tour Championship thanks to a victory in which she led or co-led after every round. I mean, this was vintage Lydia Ko. With the win, received the biggest winner's check in women's golf history. She clinched Player of the Year, you may recall, the Bear Trophy for scoring average. And since then, she has moved back to number one in the Rolex women's ranking. Take a look at what we're going to see this week. How about the 74th season with the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions at Lake Nona Golf and Country Club in Orlando, Florida. The tournament features winners from the last 2 years and a celebrity championship as well. And I can tell you, the field is stacked. You got the likes of Brooke Henderson, Arya Jatanikar, Daniel Kang, by the way, is your defending champ. Nelly Korda, Olympic gold medalist, major champ, former world number one. Your thoughts on what we might see this season? I think they came off a fantastic season. I do think we missed a little bit of that Nelly Korda, Jin Young Ko rivalry that we had seen the previous year. But what are you most looking forward to in 2023?
Didn't that seem so promising, the idea of that rivalry, when we were at the end of 21 and they seemed to be trading victories every week and it didn't quite materialize for health reasons, really, for both of them? What I'm looking forward to most this year is where the players are actually contesting these major championships. If you want equity in this game, start with the venues. And I think we're starting to see a little more of that on the LPGA Tour, particularly the US Women's Open at Pebble Beach for the first time. But also the KPMG Women's PGA Championship is going to Baltusrol, the lower course there. And Baltusrol has held the US Women's Open in the past on the upper course back in 85 and then back in 61 on the lower course. But it's a course that we haven't actually seen the women compete on now in almost 40 years, but it's such a regular venue in terms of men's major championships. Walton Heath, wonderful golf course outside of London for the Women's Open, perhaps not as linksy as we'd like it to see for the AIG, but they are going back to St. Andrews next year. The unknown, of course, is the golf club of Carlton Woods, where the Chevron Championship has moved to from the desert. But it's something of a mixed bag, but given that we're coming off a year where we got to see Muirfield for example, host the Women's British Open, and we saw Congressional host a major championship as well. We are seeing an increased quality in terms of the venues. Great actors should work on the same stages, regardless of gender, and that's what we're finally seeing in the women's game, the elevation of major venues.
It's important. It matters. It's increased purses, but also access to these golf courses. I had a long-ago conversation with the great golf writer Michael Bamberger. We both know him very well. And I should say Lorena Ochoa had retired from the game. And Michael felt that maybe she didn't have the chance to have a bite at the apple of some of those great venues. I said, you know what she did get to do? She got to win at the old course at St. Andrews in long sleeves. Playing a course like St. Andrews matters. Having access to Baltusrol, as you mentioned, being able to play at Muirfield. Baltusrol, these are important kind of pillars of the game. Muirfield, I got goosebumps last year watching Ashley Buhai hit bunker shots the same way Ernie Els had done a generation before. I think that's inspiration for this next generation, and these players deserve to play everywhere that the men play, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we're also going to see that in the years to come. You know, Riviera is also in the lineup for Women's Open. I'm really looking forward to that one. And it's 4 years away, 3 years away at this point, but Oakmont's on the list as well. Pinehurst coming back there as well. There is quality to these venues, and that matters. What are you looking forward to when we move into 2023 on the LPGA Tour, since this is week one?
Yeah, I mentioned the loss of the Jin Young Ko Nelly Korda rivalry, and there's been some question marks about Jin Young Ko's health. Nelly Korda, I think, is as important to the LPGA as any player currently playing right now. She has star potential. She's already won an Olympic gold medal. She's already been world number one. She's already been a major championship winner. She comes from a family of absolute rock stars. I mean, look at her. Now a Nike tailor-made athlete, like Tiger Woods, for example. She's an 8-time winner on the LPGA. Her older sister is a 6-time winner on the LPGA. Her younger brother just won in the first round of the Australian Open. Her father is a Grand Slam winner. This story, to me, has the potential to transcend golf. If Nelly Korda can get back to winning 4 or 5 times a year, that's the kind of person I think that can open some eyeballs outside of golf and make her more of a transcendent player, like Michelle Wee was before. Now, Michelle Wee never won at a clip like that, but her notoriety, her star power transcended the game of golf.
But Michelle's star power transcended the game of golf, I would argue, because she played against men, more so than what she accomplished the women's game. Because you could argue, as talented as Michelle Wee was, it was a fairly impoverished record that she has kind of retired from the game with, because she was bedeviled with injuries for all those years. To me, the intriguing part of the Nelly Korda question is she ticks every box you'd want in a superstar. But we live in an era now where athletes are expected to be warm and fuzzy and to play this kind of role on social media, be this playful character. And I would argue, to her credit, Nelly Korda doesn't really do that. She's focused on the job at hand. She's very, very businesslike in how she presents herself in public. And she isn't that kind of publicly warm and fuzzy personality who's out there sort of joking around at all. And I wonder if that holds her back in any way in terms of how you market an athlete in the current methodology by which they apply these things.
It's a fair question. I mean, who would have thought you'd see Tiger Woods on social media with a Santa Claus hat or a top hat directing an orchestra and singers in a tailor-made bit, or wearing pajamas in a holiday bit for tailor-made? Now, this is not Tiger Woods in 2000. You know, on the way to winning the Tiger Slam in 2001. That was Tiger height of power. This is more the avuncular Tiger Woods. But I understand your point about Nelly Korda, and I wonder if there is a kind of a halfway point for her, kind of a, you know, meet them halfway in terms of being a little bit more warm and fuzzy. I don't see that in her makeup right now. She's all about trophies. She's all about history. She's all about majors. She's all about greatness. But I understand your point. The more she's accessible, I think it can only help her brand, but you're seeing some very big-time sponsors. You're seeing some notable companies want to hitch their trailer to her because she's a 5'10", uber-talented golfer.
Yeah, she is the powerhouse potential on the LPGA Tour. That's why you see these blue-chip brands getting behind her. And you should see other players get behind her as well, because the rule applies on the LPGA Tour that, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats, and Nelly Korda can draw more eyeballs to other people out there on the LPGA Tour as well. It has the potential to be game-changing. It's just a matter of whether or not Nelly's willing to kind of go down that road of changing how she goes about her business, because she's been so focused on the playing of the game rather than the marketing of the game to this point.
And maybe received no stronger endorsement than she did at the QBE from the likes of Denny McCarthy and Kevin Kisner, who couldn't speak enough about the gifts of Nelly Korda.
And hopefully we'll see a lot more of those gifts going forward. Well, it's hard to imagine a Ryder Cup team that doesn't involve this guy, Davis Love III, a two-time captain, has just got his fourth tour of duty as an assistant captain, appointed today to Zach Johnson's backroom team from Rome. After the break, he'll be here to talk about the honour and the pressure to end a 30-year away game losing streak.
Golf Today, brought to you by WinGrips, the best grips in golf. And by Bushnell Golf and the new Pro X3, the best just got even better.
Back on Golf Today. In the last Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits, the United States beat the European squad in pretty decisive fashion. The 19-9 victory was the largest margin since Continental Europe began participating in this biennial event back in 1979. So Steve Stricker is a pretty tough act to follow as captain. Last February, five-time Ryder Cupper Zach Johnson was named captain of the US team that will play at Marco Simone Golf and Country Club in Rome, Italy this September.
And more news today. Two-time Ryder Cup captain Davis Love III has been named assistant captain for the U.S. squad. Davis most recently captained the U.S. in the President's Cup as they defeated the international team 17.5 to 12.5. Think about Davis's career in the Ryder Cup. Six times a player, 9-12-5. Record played on the last U.S. team to win on the road back in 1993. Where were you? Two-time U.S. Ryder Cup captain, lost in 2012, came back and won in 2016. And the World Golf Hall of Fame member joins us now. Davis, just when you thought you were out, they pull you back in at 58, having considered being done after Paris. Why is this the kind of job you still want to do?
Well, I just love helping out. You know, Susan Martin, that ran our Ryder Cup team for so long, and I were sitting in Chicago in the hotel Monday morning after that disappointing loss, and I said, I'll just be all-time equipment manager if you want me to. Anything to help these teams win. And I've been very blessed. Since Corey asked me in 2010 to be his assistant, I've been on almost every team since then in some way, shape, or form. And I just love doing it. It's the highlight of our year as players or as captains to get to go on these Ryder Cup trips.
Well, Zach played for you in 2012 and 2016, went 5-2-0. In those two matches. Why is he the right man to help the U.S. win for the first time on the road since you were a rookie in 1993?
Well, Zach's been obviously a great player. He's been well-respected on the PGA Tour for a long time as a leader, you know, within the Player Advisory Council or in any role. He's somebody that the players really look up to. Plus, as you said, he's been an assistant captain. He's been around these teams. And we all just love Zach. We went straight from Charlotte into Ryder Cup mode. You know, he was headed over to Italy. He's been working really hard since he was announced captain. He and Kim, his wife, are going to do an incredible job. So he's the right man. You know, he's been in this system. He helped me so much in Charlotte with the stats and things behind the scenes. So he's up to speed and ready to go. And obviously, he's going to have a great team.
Davis, the backroom team has been remarkably consistent since the task force era. We've seen a lot of you, we've seen a lot of Stricker, a lot of Furyk. Now Zach's vice captains announced so far are you and Steve Stricker. With all due respect, is there a succession plan here? When do we see the next generation of leaders who are going to follow guys like you and Jim Furyk? Do you expect Zach to announce guys who might potentially be captains 2 years down the road?
Yeah, that was what we kind of agreed to with the PGA of America back in 2014-15 was we're not just going to bring four buddies to the Ryder Cup and hang out and watch. It's going to be guys that are committed, former captains as assistants and future captains as assistants. You know, that's why Zach is ready for this role. Obviously, you know, things have changed a little bit in our captain's order, and Zach was ready to go when they said, we need you for Rome. So, yes. You saw Webb Simpson in Charlotte. Obviously, that was a layup because it's his home course. He didn't quite make the team. He's very well respected. You know, we've had Matt Kuchar was with us over in Paris. We've got some guys and a few other names We have too many names for too few spots on our assistant captains, but yeah, I really do need to hand it off to somebody else. But when Stricker says, no, I really need you. You guys understand these stats more than me. Or when Zach says, look, it's an away game in Rome. I don't want to change too much because we've had so much success lately. I'm happy to hang in there and help out.
Let's jump back 30 years. You were on the team the last time the United States won in Europe when Tom Watson was your captain. What's your strongest memory of that week? And did you ever imagine that three decades later you'd still be waiting for another away game victory?
That is one of the most incredible stats in golf. As many great teams as we've had, for some reason, we don't rise to the occasion enough on away games in the Ryder Cup. Part of it, obviously, is not knowing the golf course, but Zach's got some plans to handle that. But it's hard to believe that I'm still around 30 years later and still playing a little bit of golf and still on these teams. But, that's what's so great about the Ryder Cup. There's so much history. There's so much up and down. There's so much back and forth. And any team can win when you tee it up. So I don't know the 12 on our side or the 12 on their side, but it'll be an incredible match over there in Rome.
Davis, I'll be honest. If I was preparing for a road game, I'd want some antagonistic personalities, guys like Brooks, Bryson, Patrick Reed. How do you guys replace that outlaw energy?
Well, we've got some guys that are really passionate. I think we've got a really good group of guys that work really hard on their games and making the team. But, the Scheffler passion and the Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth passion, Cantlay and Schauffele are kind of quiet, but those guys are dead serious about this. I've been really, really impressed. Morikawa, these guys come in ready to play and serious about it. They like the fun part of it, but they want to – nobody wants to be on a losing team, and I've never seen more prepared teams. Whistling Straits was just incredible, and then Charlotte was incredible. How ready these guys are to play. So it might not be, rub you the wrong way kind of guys, but they're passionate guys about winning these cup teams.
Davis, it's still somewhat undetermined what role any LIV guys might actually have in Ryder Cups going forward. Are you fairly certain you're not going to see any of them on the United States team in Rome? And if there are any on the European side, do you think your team would kind of bristle at that a little bit and take it as extra motivation to try to prove a point?
Well, I don't know where it's all going. Obviously, it's been a big controversy for a long time. Trevor Immelman and I had a long couple years being captains leading up to Charlotte. Obviously, he lost a lot more players than the U.S. did. I don't see any road for them to play on our Ryder Cup team, certainly right now. I don't know what's going to happen with the European team, but what I do know is that the European team is going to have 12 guys that dearly want to win the Ryder Cup and not let us come over there and steal it. So if we can get past that stuff and go play golf like we did in Charlotte, I mean, we had a heck of a match there. Obviously, we were favored in Charlotte, but we had a heck of a match. And I think we'll have an incredible match in Rome. And frankly, we have to get over there and figure out that golf course, or it's going to be tough for us.
Going back to that European team, this narrative has taken root, Davis, that LIV has weakened the European team, that they will have 12 guys who aren't the 12 best guys out there. And a lot of the European players aren't doing anything to discourage that narrative out there. Are you buying it that they're actually going to be a weaker team at all?
No, they're very good at playing the underdog and playing that card and firing themselves up. So, again, whether it's 93 or 2023, any 12 group of PGA Tour, DP World Tour players that play against each other, anybody has a chance to win in match play. That's what you've seen, as I said, in an away game for us. The home team seems to rise to the occasion more than we do. So that's one thing Zach's really focused on is, hey, how do we get over there and play like we do at home? How do we learn the golf course? How do we get prepared mentally and physically for an away game? And, just like an NFL team going over and playing in London, it's a different than your normal tournament. So we just have to get a little bit better, but I don't buy it. They're going to be really good no matter what.
Davis, you have now spent more than half of your life connected to this event as a player or captain or assistant. What was your earliest Ryder Cup memory, maybe watching with your dad. What do you remember about your earliest time being a fan of the Ryder Cup?
Well, I've said this, I've used this analogy a lot. When we lost the America's Cup yacht race, everybody got really interested in it. And when we lost the Ryder Cup and watching Seve come into the Ryder Cup team, Bernhard Langer, and it get competitive, that's when I got excited about it. But, you know, when I was hitting the tour, it wasn't that big of a deal, the Ryder Cup, to make the Ryder Cup team. It took me a couple years to go, wait, this is something that I want to be a part of. I was trying so hard to make that team at Kiowa in 1991 and just missed it. And it's just become a part of my life. Like being on the board of the PGA Tour, I love being a part of an organization that's doing so much good and that's so competitive. And being a part of the PGA's Ryder Cup team is, but really, honestly, is the highlight of my career, is just being a part of it, much less being a captain or being on a winning team.
Davis, you mentioned the process that has been put in place by keeping past captains involved as sources of wisdom, future captains in there as well. It's noticeable now that Europe has kind of hit this reset button. They've brought back the Hero Cup, which was the old Seve Cup years ago, to try to breed this generation of future captains. Did you pay any attention to what was going on over there last weekend in terms of, we know Luke Donald was the puppet master of it all, but were you paying attention to the pairings that he had or any of the action that was happening there?
I didn't, but I did notice that Luke was involved. So that's what I'm saying is, we spend all year getting ready for the Ryder Cup, 2 years in Zach's case. And so Luke's already on it. He's working on his pairings, working on planning the back office stuff. So I paid attention to that. Our stats team will analyze what they did over there for us and tell us what their pairings were and what happened. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But yes, we pay attention to everything they do. We learned a lesson from them in 2012, 13, 14, that they were, the European team was more organized and forward looking than we were. And we've had to get up our game a little bit to keep up with them. So they have a great system and it's worked really, really well. And I know Luke's been involved in it for a long time.
Davis, has there been any thought about a potential American version of the Hero Cup, an Arnie Cup, a Jack Cup, something to give the Americans a little bit of an appetizer before the big meal in the fall?
Well, Zach's talking about practice rounds, but you know, that's the way we look at our team USA Golf, is we get to do it every year. Those guys don't get to do it every year. So they need a little bit of a warm up, but we just had a great warm up in Charlotte. We'll have hopefully a lot of those same guys. We had some new guys in Charlotte. They got broken into the system of being on a team. You know, we had, you know, Sam Burns, Max Homa, guys that hadn't played before, and now they're fired up to be on the Ryder Cup team. So, we don't look at it as, oh my gosh, we have to do this every year. We love doing it every year. President's Cup, as soon as we finish President's Cup, we shift gears right back to Ryder Cup.
You mentioned earlier, Davis, in an aside, that the U.S. team has kind of changed the order of its captains. I assume that was a reference to Phil Mickelson, who was so long presumed to be the likely captain 2 years down the road at Bethpage Black. That seems unlikely to happen now. Do you have any idea who will be that captain, and do you see any way back for Phil Mickelson as far as future Ryder Cup role goes?
No, unfortunately, you know, that's what a lot of us Ryder Cup team captains and you know, board members of the PGA Tour, that's what we try to explain to these guys, is don't you understand these ramifications of leaving the tour or going up against the PGA Tour? And no, I don't see a path back for Phil right now, especially in the next few teams. So to answer your question, yeah, we have a long list of guys. I have some calls the next couple of days with Zach to sort that kind of thing out. But it threw our order off for sure. But we've got some really good guys that need to be Ryder Cup captain. We've got some guys that are going to be brought into the fold, whether they're assistants this year or next time around, that'll set us up for the future. But it's disappointing that guys lost that history and legacy at the end of their career.
Davis, before we let you go, I'm noticing this rack of Carolina blue pullovers behind you. Are you trying to try out for Hubert Davis's basketball team, or is that a potential Ryder Cup outfit for the guys?
I'm actually in the RSM tournament office, and this is the leftovers from the merchandise tent. So if you're driving north again. stop in and pick up some RSM Carolina blue gear.
Well, it looks good. It looks like I'm wearing the exact same thing on this Tuesday. Davis, congratulations. We always appreciate the time with you, and best of luck in Roma.
All right, thanks. Look forward to seeing you guys.
Finally, a golfer who thinks there's too much money and not enough realism in the game these days. We're going to hear what Shane Lowry had to say on that when we come back.
Back on Golf Today, it's time now for the Rolex Series report as the DP World Tour heads to Yas Links for the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. This is the first Rolex Series event in 2023. The series continues next week, the DP World Tour Hero Dubai Desert Classic, and July 13th to the 16th, Genesis Scottish Open at the Renaissance Club, North Berwick, Scotland. Picks back up in September with the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth Club, and then concludes in November with the DP World Tour Championship. And the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship marks the first full field tournament of the DP World Tour's annual Middle East Swing. The Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship was first held in 2006. Yas Links is hosting the tournament for the second straight year. Some notables in this field, a lot of DP World Tour royalty, Francesco Molinari, Tyrrell Hatton, Tommy Fleetwood, some live golfers as well, 11 in all in the field. Now, the 2019 champ Shane Lowry met with the media today in Abu Dhabi and had some interesting comments on the state of the DP World Tour.
So I think what's happened in the last year or so, we've got sidetracked in thinking that 20 million or 100 million is just normal, and that's what we should be playing for, and that's what we're worth. And that if we're playing for 2 or 3 million on this tour, that is not enough. I still think that this tour is growing. I think with their alliance with the PGA Tour to grow in prize money, guaranteed to grow in prize money over the next 13 years, every year, I think that's good for the tour. I think it's sustainable, which is the big thing. I think having a sustainable product is something that you need to have. And I do think this tour has that. And I think, like I said, we've got sidetracked in thinking to that 100 million is just normal. You know, everybody's throwing out these figures that are just astronomical. And I think, you know, as a tour, could this tour be better? Yeah, obviously, we could all be better in anything that we do. But I do think with a steady growth over the next number of years, I do think this tour will keep improving.
How remarkable is that, Damon, that we finally hear a golfer who isn't saying, give me more, that I want more money out there. I mean, I get everybody wants more money, but I guess the question is here, what's realistic? And if somebody tells you, you know, you're worth $1 million, then you're not inclined to listen to the guy who tells you you're worth $50,000. So you get why that happens. But the perceptions have seemed to have been so skewed here as to what is a realistic amount of money for guys out here to play for. And the idea, when Shane's throwing around this idea that's come out now, the $100 million here, $200 right there, the idea that a washed-up golfer is worth more at the end of their career than they earned during the entirety of their competitive career just seems kind of farcical.
You know that old buzzword, grow the game? You know what doesn't grow the game is golfers, you know, whining about not being paid enough. And that's across sports, by the way. Fans don't want to hear about the money. They want to see the performance. They want to see history and greatness.
You think it's a big turnoff for fans?
I really do.
Talk cash.
Yeah, listen, last year was interesting as a journalist and as a golf fan. I get asked more about PGA Tour versus LIV than almost anything else. But for the soul of the game, for the spirit of the game, is it helpful for fans to be, you know, wondering who's making what and, well, this person's going there because of that? Patrick Cantlay was kind of similar, even sitting in the press center at the Tour Championship a couple years ago and a little uncomfortable with all this focus on the money and the money and the money. And I think last year was a bit of a turnoff, if I'm being honest.
Do you think any golf fan knows what size check gets slipped into that green jacket in her pocket every April?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think so. They don't care. It's all about the history. It's all about what happens on that second nine on Sunday. It's all about wondering, is Tiger Woods going to find a way to pull a rabbit out of the hat again? Or is Rory McIlroy finally going to complete the career Grand Slam? Or Scottie Scheffler's tears on Sunday morning in his wife's arms trying to figure out if he has the stomach for that fight? And he learned that the answer was yes. It's not about the zeros at the end of the check for the first major championship. And I don't think it should be at the zeros of the check for anything. I remember the discussion about the Ryder Cup a couple of decades ago when the players, should they be paid? And you know, I just thought that was a bit of a turnoff. The golf fan at home, the sports fan at home, knows that these are athletes who are well compensated. They want to see performance. They want to see grit. They want to see tears. They want to see history.
And I thought Shane Lowry made a really interesting point there, referring to the sustainability of this model. And that question may even come up for the PGA Tour as well. Once you get into this arms race as to the amount of money these guys expect to play for week in and week out and what it takes to secure those assets of the players and keep their loyalty, how sustainable is that? Because you do need corporate sponsor support in there all the time, long range, to maintain that. And what the Saudis have done is essentially skew this idea for these guys of what a reasonable amount of money is that they ought to be playing for. Because this isn't Major League Baseball. It's not the NFL. These guys are never going to be paid that amount of money, but there does seem to be a growing perception that they ought to be among those guys. And that's a tough battle to get into. And it's going to be a tough battle for the Keith Pellies of the world and the Jay Monahans of the world going forward, even long after Liv ceases to exist, if that's ultimately what happens. The narrative around the money isn't going to change. That's now locked in. And the whole idea of sustainability going forward becomes an interesting argument for these guys to actually maintain.
A little dose of perspective from the 2019 Champion Golfer of the Year coming up as the LPGA season kicks off this week. We're joined by a first-time winner from 2022, Paula Rito, shares more about the grind that has gotten her to this point and her optimism entering the new season. The LPGA season gets underway this week in Orlando, Florida, the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions. First round coverage on Golf Channel Thursday, noon Eastern time. Last August, now in her 157th start on the LPGA Tour, South Africa's Paula Rito finally became a champion. She finished with a two-putt par on 18 to win the 2022 CP Women's Open. The 9-year LPGA Tour veteran finished at 19 under par, one shot ahead of Nelly Korda and Hyejin Choi. Take a look at her career bio. Started playing golf at the age of 16, a latecomer to this game. On the NCAA champ at Purdue, first competed on the LPGA Tour in 2014 and earned that win, long-awaited win, at the CP Women's Open last year. And Paula joins us now. Paula, golf and tennis are two sports where the athletes just lose almost all the time. You won last year in your 157th start. How do you protect your confidence and your optimism that victory will ultimately be yours?
You know what? I was very optimistic, and I just really believed in myself, and I wanted to win, and I wanted to prove myself that I can. So I just kept in it and gave myself chances and did what I need to do to work on my golf game and my mental game so that I know one day I can do it.
Paula, you were one of several veterans we saw win for the first time on the LPGA Tour in 2022. Yeah. What does that do in terms of your goals for 2023? Once you've checked that box, how is your approach to this year different?
It's definitely different. You know, I more have a mindset that I can do it again. And it's a different mindset having to win and being able to have that confidence. You go into the tournament a little different, being able to know that you've done it. If you're down the stretch and you can pull it off again, you know the feelings that came with it. So I'm really wanting to chase that again and get another win for sure. Maybe double it, maybe triple it.
Well, compared to a lot of pro golfers, you arrive late to the game of golf, age 16, from what I understand, field hockey player before that. How did you make that transition so seamlessly?
You know what? It was different. Being able to play a team sport, going into an individual sport, my dad brought me into the game, and I really loved it first time I played, and I just wanted to do more and more and more. And the fact that I was able to just practice as much as I could, I didn't have to have a team with me, was really the difference. And it made me believe that I can do it quicker, you know, because I have my own self doing it and I pushed myself to do it. And so it's a different transition. And I really love the fact that I was able to do it and go to college golf and play there for 4 years and just get my mental game good there and then transition to pro golf.
Well, Paul, this is a fun week, a lot of noise, celebrities, concerts, 10 handicaps and the like. How does your mindset change at all versus a regular LPGA event?
Yeah, you know, this will be my first time in this sort of format. So I'm just really going to enjoy it. However, whenever I'm over the ball and doing my routine, I'm just going to try to focus it like it's a normal tournament. But just have fun with it. I mean, these celebrities are excited to be out here with us, excited to enjoy the week with us. So it's just as fun for them as it is for us. And being able to do it here in Florida, which is so close to home, you know, just a short drive up, I'm excited. And I enjoy Bermuda grass, so this will be a nice start.
Paula, there are some players, particularly Asian players, who stayed home this week because after this week, the tour takes a month off, and then there are trips to Thailand, to Singapore, to China, and then back to the US. What does your schedule look like coming forward? And does that schedule that goes international and has that big gap in it, do you think that's something that needs to be addressed going forward?
You know what? I sort of think of it, the fact that I'm able to play a tournament so early in the season and then have a few weeks break, I can sort of gauge where my game's at and have a few more weeks to practice certain things if I need to get ready for the longer season. So for me, I feel like it's okay. It gives me a sort of a check there. But I'm definitely going over to Asia. I'm going to go enjoy those events there. I know some people probably want to have all the events start fresh, you know, either in February and then play on from there. But I feel like this is a good way to start the year. And then if you need to work on something, you know, great, have a few more weeks off and then start in Asia.
I want to jump back earlier in your career, Paula. 11 years ago, you got to the quarterfinals of the U.S. Amateur. You lost to Lydia Ko. Was it apparent to you back then just how good she was going to become? Or are you surprised by how her career has progressed from that point onward?
Yes, exactly. So I remember when I was in the quarterfinals playing Lydia Ko, everybody was very hyped about Lydia Ko is the next, you know, big name. And I'm just over here really excited that I made it so far, especially it was my first U.S. amateur. So I told myself, hey, I'm going to give myself a good chance. I know I can do this. You know, I have the game. That's why I qualified. And I think I took it all the way to the 17th hole or something and just learned so much about how her personality was. And I just knew she was going to do well. And I think she got the invite to the Canadian Open because she won that event. And then she went on to win the Canadian Open. So, yeah, just great things for her. And definitely it was exciting to play against her.
She's won it. You've won it as well. You're from Cape Town. My wife's leaning on me to take her to South Africa for the first time, bring the family this summer. What would you recommend we do?
Oh, my gosh, there's so many you can do. You could do the wineries. There's plenty in Cape Town. You could do a safari. Depending on the time of the year you go, you can go to Table Mountain. That's another good sightseeing area. The beaches, if you want to do more of like on the boat, you can just check Robben Island and see some sharks, you know, just pretty much anything you want.
I didn't hear much after wineries.
But you're going to find your way to those anyway, then.
No question about it. Paula, you're the best. Thanks so much for the recommendation. Have a great week in Orlando.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Great catching up with Paula. And a reminder, you can catch live first-round coverage of the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions Thursday at noon right here on Golf Channel.
Welcome back into Golf Today. Eamon Lynch alongside Damon Hack. We seem to have a wine theme emerging here today, Damon. But I want to go back to the conversation we had at the top of the last hour about the American Express Championship out in La Quinta. Looking at this field, when you have John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler and guys like that, have we moved away from what felt like a period where we just looked to see when Tiger was showing up, or perhaps a little bit less so, but when Phil was showing up? But we worked off the Tiger calendar for such a long time in this game.
It's a great point you make. I do think that I'm more intrigued by what's the field going to look like, these designated events or non-designated events, who's going to show up where. You know, what's the tension level of these events? You know, how much is there a sense of urgency for these players to collect FedEx Cup points, to get their games right for the Players' Championship and the first major championship of the year? I think for 20 years it was about, when's Tiger going to show up? And sure, in the back of my mind, I'm curious what Tiger's schedule is going to look like. But right now, I'm more curious about what the PGA Tour schedule writ large is going to look like and feel like.
There's a couple of guys I'm really interested in this week is Zalatoris and Xander. Zalatoris came back at the Century Tournament of Champions after a long layoff since August from injury. He looked very sharp out there at Kapalua. we're expecting big things from him this year. And then Xander, who left Kapalua early with a back injury, and then he said there is no structural issue after his MRI. He feels good to go this week, so he's going to be watched pretty carefully as well.
Well, you said the PGA Tour no longer in Hawaii, now in Southern California this week for the American Express, and you can catch live first round coverage Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Golf Channel. Rex Hoggard is on site this week and joins us now. Rex, always great to spend time with you. The field shaping up nicely at the American Express. What more can you tell us about this week?
Damon, to the point that you guys were just talking about, this is very much going to be a year of transition. We spent a lot of time talking about this, going to events with bigger purses, events trying to get the bigger players together more often. We've seen that certainly 2 weeks ago in Maui. That was a designated event, and you saw how good the field was. But what's interesting this week is those designated events have created windows for events like the American Express to enjoy an upgrade of their own.
Yeah, I think it's part of our, you know, the new elevated events. You know, this kind of fits in where guys will play here, they'll play Torrey, you know, obviously play Phoenix. So, you know, it's a great tournament. I mean, obviously it's got a lot of history here. You know, everyone around here still calls it the Hope. So, you know, it's fun to be out here and, you know, see some of the plaques of guys that have done some pretty cool things over the last 40, 50 years out here.
Now, to give you an idea of how good this field is historically, it's the best strength of field they've had since 2000. They have 10 of the top 20 players in the world, including world number two, Scottie Scheffler. And I spoke with a couple of other players this morning. They're here this week because they like the golf course, but it also fits into their schedule.
And Rex, a lot of guys go there because they like the weather as well. You know, there's this famous dome golf where you feel as though you're playing indoors in Palm Springs. It's the same every day. Is that what we can expect this week?
Absolutely not. Since 1960, you brought up, this has been golf in a dome. Guys have come here to essentially start their years because they knew they were going to get a lot of sunshine, not a lot of wind, and it's in the desert, so you're not going to get much rain, if any at all. But yesterday was an example of what's been happening in California really the last few weeks, and it's actually called an atmospheric river. It has brought a huge amount of precipitation, just not to the coast, but it's made its way over here. Actually, yesterday when I arrived in the Palm Springs area, the winds were gusting to 30, 35 miles an hour, and there was snow just on the mountain, just west of PGA West here. So you get an idea of exactly how difficult that's going to be. Now, if you look at the forecast, there's not going to be any rain. It seems like that atmospheric river is drying out, so to speak, but it will be cold. I don't think the temperatures are going to get much higher than 60 degrees, and the wind is probably the bigger issue. You look at Friday, it's going to blow to 20 miles an hour, which doesn't seem like much, but on these desert courses, it will not be golf in a dome.
Great stuff from Rex Hoggard. We'll hear from him all week long from the California desert. And one of the players to keep an eye on, by the way, in the field this week, the American Express, Tony Finau. Last summer, Finau went on a crazy tear. Win at the 3M Open, shot a final round 67 to win by three after Scott Piercy fell out of the lead on the back nine. Big moment for him. And then 1 week later, in the winner's circle again, this time at the Rocket Mortgage Classic at Detroit Country Club. And with the win, Tony became the first PGA Tour player in 3 years to win consecutive regular season events. And he's just continued to play well. His last eight PGA Tour starts, just fantastic golf. You see all the wins all of a sudden, including in Houston, T7 at the Century Tournament of Champions. Let's hear from Big Tone meeting the media.
Yeah, it's awesome to be back. I enjoy playing golf here. Have some great memories here over the years. I got through qualifying school here to get onto the Korn Ferry Tour, so I think I would say that's right at the top for me as far as the memories around this place. But I enjoy being here. It's a great time of year, and proud to be an ambassador for Amex as well. So this is just an all-around great week for me.
And dating back to last season, have six top tens out of the last eight starts. So how's your game feeling entering the week?
Yeah, it feels pretty good. I've, you know, had a nice practice week last week back home with my coach, Boyd Summerhays, and we're just in Scottsdale. The weather didn't cooperate over the last couple days, but overall had a nice practice week, and I feel like my game is in a pretty good place. You know, it's early in the year, I don't know if you really can have a full grasp on where your game's at, you know, but that's why tournament golf is important to play, and I think I'm just looking forward to competing again and looking forward to starting the season.
As you stated, early in the year, but have already had a win. You're one who sets goals. What additional goals have you set for this season?
Yeah, I'm definitely a goal setter. I think most of us are out here. I think one of my main goals, I think I stated and I saw on a PGA Tour clip at in Hawaii, honestly, one of my main goals is to be, you know, as healthy as I've ever been off the golf course. This meaning eating a lot better. You know, I love food. And whenever I'm asked what I'd be outside of being a PGA Tour golfer, I always say a chef. And it's because I love to cook and I love to eat. So I want to eat better this year. You know, if you're talking about goals on the golf course, you know, I think winning is always a goal for everybody. So I like winning as well. So of course winning, but I would still say my main goal is to try and eat a little bit better this year than I did last year.
Before it open up to questions for the media, what's your favorite thing to cook and what are you best at cooking?
I love cooking curry chicken. I love eating curry chicken and I love eating curry dishes. I love Indian food. So I'm saying pretty good at it because I cook it a lot. I would say my kids love a good steak. I'm pretty good at grilling and I enjoy grilling as well. So those are probably my main dishes. A lot of meat. We love meat.
And if you have a question, we're going to start off here with Larry in the front.
I can hear
go
you.
Go ahead. We'll pick up the question.
Yeah.
You're good.
Thanks.
Given everything that's happened in the last 6 months, really, does it feel different for you coming to a tournament now than it did maybe 7, 8, 9 months ago?
Yeah, I think, you know, winning breeds confidence. There's no question. I feel that for the most part, I've always been a pretty confident person, but winning breeds more confidence, I think. And I think I definitely... I just feel more comfortable with my game, and my game is as good as it's been in my career, and I think that's always the goal, you know, for me. Every year I play is to just try and get better, and I feel like as a player I've gotten better through years, and I definitely feel better approaching this year than I did last year.
Yeah, big tone with the 54-hole leader a couple of years ago, ended up finishing solo fourth behind Siwoo Kim. Amazing how the conversation has changed surrounding Tony Finau. It was all, when is he going to win? And now it seems like he's not stopped winning.
Yeah, he was a guy who was famous for leaving PGA Tour events with big checks and not many trophies. And that narrative has changed pretty quickly with those victories that we just saw on his lineup of results. And I mean, he's only finished outside the top seven twice in his last 7 or 8 events. And he had a great line in there where he said winning breeds confidence. Well, confidence seems pretty contagious with him as well. He looks like a pretty relaxed guy. He just seems as though he's in a good place. He's no longer walking into media centres expecting the questions about when are you actually going to deliver on what everyone can see, the talent level is. When are you actually going to walk away with more trophies? That narrative isn't there anymore with Tony Finau. Now, the flip side of that is he's about to start getting these questions of when are you going to deliver more in major championships?
Absolutely.
Because that hasn't been a strength of his to this point. He hasn't really factored in them very often. And that's a good position to be in if you're Tony Finau, is that suddenly you're now elevated into... That millstone is now off you. Let's throw another one on and see what you do with that one.
Seen it forever. Phil, Justin Rose, Adam Scott... You know, they get some accomplishment, but then there's, you know, all the reporters are kind of standing around. Wait, who's going to be the person to ask, you know, name the player? When are you going to win that major? What do you have to do? It's like, you know, you throw a few softball questions out there to the player first. You kind of, you know, soften them up, loosen them up. And then the question inevitably is, well, when are you going to start, you know, what green jacket? You know, what's your size? What's your sleeve size? You know, what's going on with you in the U.S. Open? And I think Tony handled those questions very well, and he had a lot of them for several years since winning in Puerto Rico in 2016. And some of those questions in Q&A sessions got a little bit uncomfortable, not because he didn't handle them well, but just because you felt bad for a player who was playing terrific golf, but whether from some mistakes that he made or some great play, Webb Simpson making a couple of birdies late on a Sunday in Phoenix, he was coming up short time after time.
He did come up short time after time, but it's important to note, as you did, that not all of them were Tony Finau's throat constricting on him on a Sunday afternoon.
Right.
A lot of times, Tony Finau shot good rounds on Sunday.
He did.
And just got slightly outplayed. But he seems to have a weapon that's working for him better now over the last 6 months than it was before, which is the shortest club in his bag. He's now tied seventh on the PGA Tour in putting. If you look at where he finished over the last 4 years, in that category, he was 85th, 91st, 69th, and 125th.
Yeah.
That's an enormous improvement around the business end of a hole for Tony Finau. And, you know, you get confidence out of putting really well. If you know you can capitalise on the other things that you're doing well, that's where confidence gets bred out there. And Tony Finau looks like he's one of the more confident guys on tour. He's put in a week with Bruce Summer Hayes out in Scottsdale. So he's got a, you know, he's got to be a guy you're going to look at this week, particularly if the dome effect holds on. Rex Hoggard didn't seem to be predicting that the weather was going to be great, but when you're putting as well as Tony Finau, you got to be a contender here because, as John Rahm colourfully reminded us last year, it is a putting contest.
He is putting differently now. A couple of years ago, especially, I remember on that Sunday and trying to win this championship, a lot of the putts seem to come up short. When you're nervous, that's often what you see. The putt's not quite making it to the hole. Watch Tony Finau now. Much more 2 and 3 footers coming back as opposed to the putts coming up just short.
He's got every weapon that is required to be a standout breakout star on the PGA Tour. The only thing that he didn't have for so long was confidence.
Yeah.
What you saw there is a guy who's not lacking that anymore.
Length off the tee and accuracy as well. So let's take a look at the Comcast Business Tour Top 10. The reason this is so important is since 2009, every player who finished in the Comcast Business Tour Top 10 has made it to the Tour Championship at East Lake. So if players finish in the Top 10, odds are they're going to make it to the Tour Championship. There's Big Tone smiling at number 10.
David, the PGA Tour's new designated events could have been a problem for this week's American Express, which doesn't have that status. Instead, the Amex has a field other events might drool over. The tournament director, Pat McCabe, will be here to tell us how he did it. Next.
Back on Golf Today, a reminder, you can catch live first-round coverage of the American Express Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Golf Channel. Flashback, 2018, stars in the field this week. Won it in 2018. John Rahm took the title in the playoff over Andrew Landry. How about this? His last 5 PGA Tour and DP World Tour starts, Rahm has 3 wins, tie for 2nd, and a tie for 4th. That is pretty, pretty good.
Let's see if he can keep that streak going. John Rahm, one of the big stars in the field this week. Damon, alongside guys like Scottie Scheffler, Tom Kim, Patrick Cantlay, and last week's winner, Siwoo Kim. And we're pleased to be joined now by the man who has compiled this field, the executive director of the American Express Championship. Pat McCabe joins us. Pat, there's been a lot of talk about the changes to the PGA Tour schedule, some events designated, some not. Were you concerned at all that you might not be able to pull together a field of the caliber that you have actually attracted?
You know, I think certainly it's something that we all as tournament directors pay attention to, but we're very fortunate this week. We've got 5 of the top 7 in the world here. We're John Rahm, Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele, Tony Finau, and the list goes on. So we're looking forward to a great week out here in La Quinta.
Pat, about 8 weeks ago, the longtime golf writer for the Desert Sun, Larry Bohannon, wrote that you were optimistic and upbeat about the prospects of a strong field, and your faith has been rewarded. Why did you have such belief that the great players would come?
I mean, I think we have a lot of things in our favor. We've got the beautiful La Quinta weather. We have a great time slot in the calendar here, the 3rd week of January. And our format is really fun. You know, these guys get a chance to definitely play 3 competitive rounds, which is unique, certainly early in the season, so they can get their reps in. They play 3 perfect golf courses here at PGA West and of course, La Quinta Country Club. And all the amenities here in the Valley, and it's a fun, relaxed week, both on and off the golf course. So we're happy with how it all turned out.
This is evidence, Pat, that your job isn't a 1-week-a-year job. What's the toughest part of the job this week, and what's the toughest part of it the other 51 weeks of the year?
Well, last night it was the wind, but we fixed that this morning, and it's always something. But no, it is a full year operation. Certainly, we have a team of 35 team members this week. We of course have 1,200 volunteers. We have a number of sponsors, of course, led by American Express, our title sponsor, who has just been a tremendous asset to this event. They signed on board in 2020. They'll be with us through 2028. and all the things they're doing for this valley, the charitable organizations, all the different things at the event. We just couldn't do it without them. So, again, it's going to be a great week, and the future is bright here for sure.
Pat, when you're talking to players beyond the great golf courses, what are you selling? Is it the food, atmosphere, family vibe? What do you focus on?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think a lot of these guys, they've got relationships here in the Valley, whether it's renting a home from someone nearby or playing these courses, knowing the members. There's so many other good golf courses here in the greater Coachella Valley. I think that's a big part. You know, Friday and Saturday night, we've got concerts right here in the driving range that their family can come and attend. And of course, some evening functions special for them as well. And so it's a number of things. It's certainly more than just a golf tournament. It's a very important golf tournament where the winner will take home a nice check and 500 FedEx Cup points on Sunday. But after golf, when the sun goes down, they have a lot of fun as well.
Did the American Express have any discussions about potentially pursuing designated event status, Pat? Or is that something you would anticipate at some point down the road, that that option will present itself?
Sure, I think so. I mean, I think all of us would like that designation at some point, but some of those factors are out of our control, certainly. So we just deal with what we can and know that, you know, we're playing for $8 million this week. We're going to continue to give back money to local communities. And so if that opportunity arises in the future, we'll gladly take it. But again, five of the top seven in the world, and the depth of this field is better than it's ever been.
Pat, according to Larry Bohan and my buddy from the Desert Sun, no tournament host, though, for only the eighth time since 1965, no President Clinton or Phil Mickelson or George Lopez or Bob Hope or that person like that. How important is it for that role to be filled at some point?
Sure, I think it's something we'd look forward to. I mean, again, this event is 64 years of history, many of which did have a host. Again, you mentioned Mr. Hope and previous players or celebrities or dignitaries, but we're again focused on what we've got this week, and we'll definitely have Amex through at least 2028. So if that's something that we're looking for, I know a few other events have hosts, most do not. So again, we'll see where that plays out, and we'll see what happens.
You mentioned five of the top seven in the world, Pat. You have a field and weather that a lot of your opposite numbers at other PGA Tour events would probably kill for at this point, certainly later in the year. Do you sense any uneasiness among your peers at other tournaments about their ability to attract the field, particularly when you move into the deeper into the season and guys start to get compressed with major championship obligations and things like that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, again, there's a great event on this tour every single week. So, again, all of us are trying to differentiate ourselves with the uniqueness. You know, there's more events here in the state of California than any other state. And so I think we all talk to each other, but we all collaborate. We all work with one another to identify what they're doing, what we can do better, and see what happens for the future. But again, I wish them the best. They wish me the best, and you know, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Pat, I wish I could click my heels three times and stand right where you are on this Tuesday. It looks gorgeous. Thanks for the time. Have a great week.
All right, guys, you as well. We'll say hey to Larry for you. So thanks for having me on.
Give him my best, Pat McCabe with the Amex. I tell you what, this is a competitive landscape for someone like Pat who knows he's got, you know, competitors, and I'm sure rising tide lifts all boats, but he has to continue to distinguish the American Express, as do all the other tournament directors on the PGA Tour schedule.
And that kind of landscape is not getting any less competitive out there now, particularly when the bandwidth that the elite players have to give to other events is limited, because, okay, we're going to have these 13 designated events every year. That's great if you're one of those, and each year I'm assuming they will rotate at least three or four of those designated events. The great unknown here is the three non-designated events that the top players are obligated to play. And I keep hearing rumblings from players of uneasiness about whether or not they want to do that. And I think that's going to be one of these fronts that Jay Monahan's going to battle with players over the course of the next year. They're going to see how it goes, but guys tend to complain when they're
told what to do,
to play somewhere.
Yes.
And in some cases, it's fine. It works for a schedule. At this time of the year, you're going to see a guy show up here who they're comfortable here. And a lot of guys aren't comfortable with the Pro-Am format where there's a lot of AMs around. But you're in a place like Palm Springs in the winter most of the time, bar what Rex told us this time, but most of the time the weather is fairly predictable. The conditions are predictable. You're knocking off that winter rust. You're getting yourself set for later in the year. But if you're a tournament director in the middle of the summer where there are obligations towards heading towards the FedEx Cup playoffs and around major championships, you're probably going to have to work a little bit harder to get those players than perhaps Pat had to this week.
It does feel like in some ways this is a moving target for Jay Monahan and the members of the pack and the PGA Tour membership as a whole in this time where they're trying to protect the product and keep the PGA Tour the place to be for the best golfers in the world. There's going to be some bumps along the way. There'll be some disagreements as well. I by no means think this is a finished product. Do you?
No, not at all. And the sponsors will have a lot to say about that as well. I mean, it's a huge financial commitment these guys make to the PGA Tour every year. And this is all really about guaranteeing the product. And to what extent can the commissioner guarantee the product? I mean, you can say now there's 13 events. We can guarantee you who's going to be there. It's not within the gift of Jay Monahan to guarantee the product 40-odd weeks a year, because you're not going to get a commitment from these guys to show up there every week.
Well, good to have Pat on to give us some insight what it's like to put a tournament together. Still to come on Golf Today, it was a life-changing Sunday for Mateo Fernandez de Oliveira, who won the Latin America Amateur Championship in record-setting fashion. Which major is he most looking forward to teeing it up in? We'll find out next. Back on Golf Today, just one day before his 23rd birthday, Mateo Fernandez de Oliveira earned a big prize, shooting a final round 67 in the Latin America Amateur Championship to win the title, and in the process set a tournament scoring record at 23 under par. And this young man has been getting it done. You see the win in the Latin America Amateur Championship. Finished runner-up in 2022 Western Amateur. Plays his college golf at Arkansas, Wu Pig Sui, third-team All-American in 2022. Let's welcome in Mateo. Now, Mateo, congratulations. Happy belated birthday. It isn't often in sports that a runner-up finisher gets a chance at a do-over the very next year and wins it all. What are you most proud of in doing exactly that?
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me. It's been a good week for me, long week as well. Going back from coming short by one from last year, and getting it done this year, it meant a lot, and I'm very, very proud and happy to have won the Latin American Am, and I'm looking forward to a great year.
Mateo, you've now played, I believe, in five Latin American Amateur Championships. You've been second, you've been first. What impact has this event had on the region in terms of how premier players from that region take it seriously?
I think the Latin American Am has been helping a lot the like golf to grow in Latin America. We were talking with Julian Perico about this one of the rounds that we played together, and it's been a major impact for us. We growing up, golf is so much smaller than it is in the rest of the world in Latin America, and having these opportunities for us to get exposed to the biggest stage in golf, it's just amazing. It's hard to find a better opportunity for us.
So some tremendous prizes come along with that trophy. You're an invitation to the Masters. You're into the United States Open. You're into the Open Championship at Royal Liverpool. Have you let your mind drift forward to what that experience is going to be like at those majors?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still in shock. I never been to Augusta to start with the Masters. I still don't know what I'm going to expect that week. I know I will get to know the place in first person in this week on Thursday. So, and I will have a better look to what the week is gonna like, but. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to all these majors. It's going to be life-changing experience for me, so I'm very happy for it.
What are you going to do at Augusta National? Sun up to sun down, 72 holes. Like, how do you even plan out an itinerary to try to learn the golf course?
Well, I'm trying to get a local caddy, which is a friend of mine, so he can get me through and walk me through the golf course. talking to me about what do I need from my game to have a better feed for Masters Week. I listened and heard a lot of different things. So, I mean, I just have to embrace it myself and see what the challenge is going to look like.
Well, we hope that scouting trip goes well this week. When you get there in April, a lot of first-timers tend to try to seek out a Masters veteran or one of their heroes to try to play a practice round and soak up some knowledge or experience. Who's top of your list of guys that you would like to play a practice round with at the Masters?
Well, I've already been texting with Joaquin to play a couple rounds. It would be nice to tee it up again with him. I played with him some junior golf before in the past, so it would be really nice for me to get back to play with him. Of course, I mean, I know it's going to be hard, but my life idol has been Tiger always, so I mean, it would be something crazy, but I don't know who I'm going to play with, but any player that is teeing it up that week is a great player, so I'll have the pleasure to tee up with the best in the world, no matter who that player is.
We'll put in a good word, see if T-Dub can make something happen. Now, these highlights we show you, you're wearing that beautiful light blue of Argentina, and not long before you won, Argentina won the World Cup in Qatar. How much inspiration did that give you, if at all?
It was a big inspiration for me. Soccer is our biggest sport down there, and what they did was crazy, I think. All the world got to know how big is soccer in Argentina from the celebrations. They inspire a lot of people. Personally, I really got inspired. It was, I don't know if it's going to be Messi's last World Cup, but it was going to be my last Latin American am. So I got inspired by him. He's a role model for any athlete in the world. He's a hard worker. He's done a lot of great things apart from his success, and it's just great for me to see it and embrace it in Argentina where I was to celebrate with all my Argentinian friends. So, yeah, I really got inspired by them.
Well, speaking of sporting legends from Argentina, I read that in 2016 you went to Royal Liverpool, and when the folks in the clubhouse found out that you were from Argentina, something special happened. What do you remember about that trip?
I remember just walking into the clubhouse, and first thing, I think it was probably the Cali Master, someone that was there, asked me where I was from because my accent was different. I said Argentina, and they told me, okay, come with me. And they took me to the lunchroom where they have portraits from Roberto Di Vincenzo when he won there in 1967, his four rounds. And all what they talked to me was the legacy that he left in that place. They told me about how big of a gentleman he was, how good he was playing golf too. I mean, going back where he won, it's going to be super special. I knew that before starting this week. I knew that the Open was being played where Roberto won. So, I mean, just getting it done and I'm going back where he won, it's going to be unbelievable for me.
There is a wonderful symmetry to that, Mateo. You mentioned earlier that this was going to be your last Latin America championship. Obviously, you're not planning to defend the title. What does your plan look like in terms of the decisions you're going to make for your career over the course of the next 6 to 12 months?
Well, that's something I need to talk with my team, actually. I have no idea what the plans are like, because I thought turning pro after the season was done with the Razorbacks, but these plans have changed. I think I have to play every single major as an amateur, and I will do it. So probably I will have to wait and delay a little bit my professional turn or my change into being a professional golfer. But I will have to talk with my team and see what the best for me to do it is. I have no idea right now.
Well, Mateo, you got a lot of big weeks ahead in 2023, including this week as you visit Augusta National Golf Club. Thanks for the time. Happy birthday and congratulations.
Thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it.
Last year, Miguel Angel Jimenez showed he has all the tools. Winning in Hawaii, made birdie on the 72nd hole to shoot a final round 66, and defeated Stephen Alker on the second playoff hole to win. It was Miguel's third victory in this event, and the resume has been fantastic. You know, before 50 and north of 50 as well. 13 career wins on PGA Tour Champions, 2 senior majors, has won in all 8 of his seasons on PGA Tour Champions, career high 3 wins in 2022. And the man himself joins us now from Hawaii. Miguel, you have more wins in Hualalai than any place in your PGA Tour Champions career. Why does that golf course with the lava and the waves crashing fit your game so well?
Yeah, well, it's a nice golf course, and I really feel good here. You know, it's very important when you feel nice and with a good mood in your body, in your soul, you know. And I feel good here, and the golf course is always super conditions. Actually, this year is probably the best year in conditions. And well, feel great here, and that's the main thing. You know, you need to feel good where you are.
Miguel, you turned 59 last week. Your stretching routine is famous. You're obviously very healthy, but how is the body holding up at this stage?
No, well, I still keeping my routine. You know, now here we are. That what you see on the driving range is just to refresh what I've been doing in the morning. No, actually this morning already I've been for 1 hour 20 minutes on the gym, where I make a lot of 15-20 minutes of cardio, and then work out all the different parts of my body. You know, and then. That is something that I'm doing almost every day, and that's the only way to keep nice and healthy, and strong and flexible through the time. I'm 59, and as you say, you know, I feel pure, you know.
It's just a shame you can't stand up and stretch for us right now. Is the game feeling as good as the body? You obviously won 3 times last year. Do you feel as though your game can give you the same this year?
Well, I hope so. You know, I've been for the last months. I didn't play much golf. I just been in Austria with a family of my wife there for Christmas. Then in New Year in Mala with my family. Been 1 month away from golf, almost. And then been last week where I start to practice again in Dominican Republic, where I live now, in Casa de Campo.
Miguel,
and then the golf my game when I start hitting last week. It was like that, no? And then it started getting closer and closer and closer. And I hope in this couple of days coming, no, it's getting more narrow, the target that when I start to play, no? And hearing good, hearing okay, but you know, you need to build it up again a little bit, the game and the shots to the flag, yeah.
Well, Miguel, you've been winning professional golf tournaments since the 1980s. What is your favorite win of all time and why?
Okay, I believe every tournament, I always say, you know, every tournament has something special. You know, it shows you that you are there, that you are in the right mood, you know. But I probably would say that winning in St. Andrews, you know, is one of the top things, you know. Winning St. Andrews, every professional wants to win in a golf tournament in St. Andrews, and win a major there in 2018. And probably that is one of my favorite spots, probably. Yeah.
Do you think about retirement at all, Miguel? Do you ever think that you're just going to take that cigar and bottle of wine and walk along the beach and not bother playing anymore?
No, well, you know, it's that time will tell you what you have to do. You know, to me, golf is a way of living. It's my life. But probably it will come the moment that when you play well, and when you play well, you know you cannot win, then probably is the moment to say it's down. To me, the motivation is getting every day, going up, walking, and play because I want to win, you know? The day you play your best golf and you know you cannot win, I think that's the moment to say bye-bye.
Miguel, we're both a fan of golf and of wine. I'm a big fan of Prado Enea Muga and La Rioja Alta, wonderful Spanish wine. When did you become such a fan of Spanish wine?
Well, you know, it's a very nice, no? The Tempranillo grape, that is the typical grape there in Spain, you know, it's a nice taste, nice structure, and easy to drink, and the value and everything is according to that, no? And you have a good taste. This Prado Enea from Mugar is a great wine. I recommend you to get into the Roda 1, Sirsions, Rioja Alta 904, something like that. You have a lot of good wines with a good value.
Fantastic recommendations from the timeless Miguel. Hey, have a great week. Easy on the wine this week. Wait till Sunday. Best of luck as you go for win number 4 at Hualalai.
Yeah, we'll try. Last night I have an aperitif with some local drink from here. Very nice local beer and this beautiful rum with the Mickey here. Beautiful, yeah.
No question about it. We all want to grow up and be like Miguel Angel Jimenez, joining us from Hawaii. How about the way he goes about his business? Do you think about the wins and the fact that he continues to be not just relevant, but prolific at the age of 59?
He's all of those things, but I don't think about the wins at all, even though he has them. I just think about the way he goes about life. I mean, Alan Shipnuck, a writer we both know, has often said that one of his abiding memories of the 1997 Ryder Cup was seeing Miguel walking along a beach in the evening with a cigar, a glass of wine, and a Speedo. That's a memory that just doesn't leave you at a certain point. But he just cruises through life. He's enjoying everything about his life. And maybe that's actually why the golf is as good as it is at the age of 59, that rather than the good golf making him happy, it's the general happiness and balance with which he goes through life. Maybe that leads to good golf.
Well, his whole stretching thing, it was kind of like a comedy bit for a lot of people in this game.
It's working, man.
Clearly, it's more than just for, you know, tweets and hits and all that. I mean, he's clearly motivated. I apologize for waking him up early to get him on this show. He said, I've been up for 2 hours. I've already got my workout in. What have you done on this Tuesday, basically?
Well, I think I'm going to take his wine strategy. If that doesn't work, then I'll try the stretching strategy, but I think I'd start with the wine.
Did you hear him kind of congratulate me on my taste in Spanish wine?
I did hear him refer to value wine. I'm just wondering if he thinks your taste is cheap.
It could be a little bit of that.